There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Stay comfortable and protected on the job with new boots from Tack and Shoes. Come in today, you'll find the area's biggest and best selection of high quality footwear from brands like Wolverine, Redback, Danner, Timberland, Ariat, Keen, and so much more. Let Tackin's professionally trained staff help you find the perfect pair of boots for the kind of work you do. Tackin Shoes at the corner of 8th and Spring in Paso, 668 Marsh in San Luis, and online at 805boots.com. Tackin's, proudly serving the Central Coast since 1937.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Dan Beyer.
The New York Jets are trading quarterback Justin Fields to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Jets will get a sixth-round pick in 2027 for Fields. New York will also pay $7 million of the $10 million that is guaranteed on Fields' contract. Veteran corner Darius Slay Jr. announced his retirement from the game today after 13 seasons and six Pro Bowl appearances. Alabama guard Aiden Holloway arrested this morning on a felony drug charge. Alabama's a four-seed and plays 13-seed Hofstra in the NCAA tournament on Friday in Tampa. Authorities say they recovered more than a pound of marijuana, paraphernalia, and cash at the residence. Butler men's basketball coach Thad Matta announced his retirement from coaching, won 502 games in his career during two stops at Butler, Xavier, and Ohio State, where he led the Buckeyes to two Final Fours. CBS Sports says Penny Hardaway is back at Memphis next year. WBC semis, Italy and Venezuela, 7 Eastern on FS1.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, after a short-lived increase during the pandemic, California's processing tomato acreage is set to decline for a third straight year. USDA's January report shows the state's tomato processors planned to contract for 9.8 million tons from 185,000 acres this year, down 11% from last year. If processors' intentions remain unchanged, those figures would make the tonnage contracted for growers this year the lowest since 2005. Leaders from across the U.S. ag sector will gather at USDA headquarters March 24th to celebrate National Agriculture Day. It's a celebration recognizing the vital role agriculture plays in providing food, fiber, fuel, and economic strength to communities across the U.S. National Ag Day is organized by the Agricultural Council of America and observed annually to increase public awareness of agriculture's contributions and the people who produce the nation's food and resources. Well, with spring planting beginning around the U.S., it is critical to secure transit for vessels carrying fertilizer through the Strait of Hormuz. If farmers are unable to obtain the remaining supplies in time, we could see reductions or shifts in planted acreage and lower yields. Countries exposed to disruptions in the region account for nearly 49% of global urea exports and about 30% of global ammonia exports.
Today, we're talking with aphids and whiteflies about Safina insecticide from BASF.
We just got nailed with it.
So tell us, how you feeling?
Really, really weird.
And you still want to devour this field?
No way, bro.
There you have it, folks. Safina insecticide is specifically engineered to disorient aphids and whiteflies so they can't eat. And when they can't eat, they can't destroy.
Help protect your alfalfa from aphids with Safina insecticide. Always read and follow label directions. Spring alternaria pressure can be a real issue for almond growers, but Alyssa's fungicide can help control it. How do I know that? Because I'm an almond grower, and that hammering sound isn't from a shop. That's the sound of Alyssa's fungicide hitting back against diseases. Hey, can you keep it down for a minute? With two powerful active ingredients, Alyssa's fungicide lays a strong foundation against alternaria, rust, and scab, delivering dependable, long-lasting residual control. Okay, you're good now. Always read and follow label directions.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Pass Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Pass Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Maria Bartiromo, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are trying to hold on to gains in afternoon trading as oil prices pull back, as efforts to restore the flow of oil through the Persian Gulf intensifies. U.S. crude prices fell below $94 a barrel after topping $102 earlier. Falling oil prices are helping boost stocks of companies with big fuel bills like airlines and cruise operators. Oil prices, though, like Chevron and ExxonMobil, are lower as oil prices slip but remain elevated while the Middle East conflict continues. Most all of the 11 S&P 500 sectors are higher, led by tech. The Magnificent Seven big-cap tech stocks are higher across the board, led by Meta and Tesla. And according to Reuters, Meta Platforms is planning to lay off about 20% or more of its workforce in order to offset its artificial intelligence spending plans. And its stock is up 2%. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm Alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
Today I'm going to talk a little bit more about education, just to get something off my chest. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction. For architectural, metal, roofing, and siding, call Aaron at 610-1256.
In this political season, there's been some talk about the need to increase federal aid to education. Indeed, the National Education Association proclaims a crisis in education, which can only be met by massive infusions of billions of federal dollars. Well, however you define crisis, we can at least agree in the last 20 years, the quality of education has declined by anyone's standard. Scores in college entrance exams have fallen continuously until last year they reached an all-time low. But can this be laid to inflation or reduced spending? In these 20 years, inflation has raised the cost of things 57.2%. The average cost of educating a pupil in the public schools has gone up 211%. The total cost in constant dollars has gone up four times as much as enrollment. The number of school employees has increased 2.5 times as much as the increase in enrollment. But significantly, the increase in non-teaching employees, administrators, etc., is up 4 times as much. There are fewer pupils per teacher and fewer per classroom. In what has been called the most thorough study of the public schools ever made, Dr. James Coleman of Johns Hopkins University says there is no relationship or ratio between the quality of education and class size or the number of pupils per teacher or cost of teacher salary. Well, if the National Education Association is wrong and a shortage of money isn't to blame, how do we explain the drop in quality? May I suggest the possibility that educators tinkering with the system, their eyes on a brave new world which they were going to build right in the classroom, just may have tossed out some pretty tried and true fundamentals. We've all been aware of the educationist claims that the old-fashioned reading, writing, and arithmetic was no longer relevant. School was going to mold the now generation into world citizens, free of prejudice, hostility, or even a competitive instinct. Why did we let their theories go without argument? Why did none of us point out that mankind has made more advances in virtually every field in the last 25 or 30 years than in all of history up to the present? It doesn't take a genius to figure out that the men and women responsible for those advances got their education in the old-fashioned system the educationists are so determined to scrap. Are we to believe those who harnessed the atom, took us to the moon, gave us the miracles of computers, electronics, jet travel, and an end to so many crippling and death-dealing diseases, did all of this in spite of their education? Someone in those old-fashioned schools that are so despised by today's elitists must have done something right. Let me add a postscript. Yesterday, I mentioned the old-fashioned McGuffey's readers that were standard in our schools for more than half a century. Fourth graders read the Sermon on the Mount, King Solomon and the Ants by Whittier, Alfred the Great, and the history of the United Netherlands. Little Johnny could read then. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner-broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bordan to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sound Off on this Monday afternoon. Kevin Will in studio, and
Our guest who was scheduled today left me a phone number, and it's nothing but the answering machine. Tried to get the young lady in, but to no avail. I was given the number to call, and it is her workplace, but the workplace, it's just the answering machine. So I have no guest today, but what I thought I'd do is we have a special coming up after the top of the hour, and it has to do with the Manhattan Project and has obviously a huge impact on the United States and the rest of the world during World War II, and explains how it was put together and so forth. But I got a little piece here since our guest is not available. It's a gentleman by the name of Tom Dowd. Tom Dowd is, I believe he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, what does this have to do with the Manhattan Project? Well, Tom Dowd, he worked on the Manhattan Project. And when he tried to get into engineering school following his work with the Manhattan Project, they wouldn't allow him in because they said he didn't have enough experience. It's kind of funny. But it worked out well for him because he was a dear man and one of the most well-known record producers of the late 50s and early 60s, even going into the 70s. And he came up with quite a few techniques. Something as simple, and I think this special here explains it. When you hear Bobby Darin's splish splash in the tub there and it sounds like water, it's a Dixie cup. It's a Dixie cup. He was the one who came up with that. Now, again, you know, we always have to think of the times and technology and so forth, but just the innovation of the man. And he was a dear man. I've seen interviews with him, and his life story is pretty interesting. So since our guest didn't show up today, and we will do this in leading into the historical Manhattan Project.
Record producers, Tom Dowd.
The list of Tom Dowd's credits is endless. Let me just say that amongst the names we'll be featuring are Eric Clapton, Aretha Franklin, Rod Stewart, Otis Redding, the Allman Brothers. And that's just the beginning. For Tom Dowd began recording life as an engineer almost 35 years ago.
I hit the recording industry at a vital time. The recording industry was a hand-me-down of radio. They were using radio equipment, they were using radio station studios, they were using all kinds of antiquated hand-me-down things, and the people who were dressed operating it were radio people who really didn't care more than to be radio people. And here I was, a little bit of knowledge of music, appreciation of do this, do that, and it can do that, why don't you use it this way? And I terrorized it.
Tom Dowd, at 56, still as fast-talking and as fast-moving as ever. With a technical and musical background, he was perfectly suited for an industry, but after 70 years of recording, still needed pulling into the 20th century. He was swiftly to become synonymous with Atlantic Records, for whom he's done the bulk of his work, becoming an integral part of the production team that featured Jerry Wexler, Arif Mardin, and the brothers Amit and Neswi Ertegun. They were to be the Whiz Kids of American music, primarily black American music in the 60s. But who was to know that back at the beginning?
Atlantic Records started in 1947. I did one or two gospel dates for them and one or two jazz dates for them. And then I think first record I made for them that was a success for them was either a Ruth Brown record or Brownie and Stick McGee record. I don't know which came first, whether it was Wine Spodiote or Teardrops from My Eyes. I don't know which one came first. I'd have to look at, I mean, that's a long way back. But at the same time, one of the founders of Atlantic Records, a chap named Herb Abramson, who was Ahmet Ertegun's partner in setting up the company, was working as an A&R man for another company in New York called National Records. And there was an artist on that label, two or three artists on that label, their early roster in 1947, because I remember making records with them, was Joe Turner, Billy Eckstein, a group called The Ravens, and a girl singer named Eileen Barton. And I made the first monstrous record that I ever made was in that first year that I engineered. It was If I Knew You Were Coming Out of Bake the Cake with Eileen Barton. And so that was like, holy crow, anything is possible. And that was in back of making these other records for Atlantic that were then race record hits and ultimately legendary records.
Down in New Orleans where everything is
fine. All them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mess, their delight.
Wine, wine.
Haven't had
wine, wine, wine.
Oh boy, has that bothered me.
Drinking Wine, Spodiody, from the period 1949-1950 by Stick McGee and his buddies. Now, one of the more bizarre aspects of the recording industry in America in those days was that there were black or race records, which were played on black radio stations and sold to black buyers. This was the underground, or so it appeared to the four majors of the day, Columbia, RCA, Capitol, and Mercury, who were producing records principally for the white market, but were obviously not above poaching black material whenever it seemed profitable to do so.
The people in the pop orientated record companies that had not been all kind of lyric deletions just to make it so that it could get on the air, because we knew it was going to be a hit record, you know, no question.
Hey, mama, don't you treat me wrong. Come and love you, daddy, all night long, all night long. Hey, hey, all right. Well, tell me what I say. Tell me what I say. Baby.
Ray Charles, What I Say. And just in case you're wondering, that was an even shorter version than any but Tom Dowd edited, but for the sake of this program, it will have to suffice. During all of his time, Dowd was working as an engineer rather than producer, and it was in that capacity that he welcomed two very hot young writers come record producers to the company, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, and introduced them to the magic of multi-track recording. They proved good pupils.
Well, Jerry and Mike, you have to understand, are two very brilliant young men. And I think it was Jerry and Ahmed who inspired them to come east and try writing several songs for one or two of our artists, and said to them, go make them. And Jerry and Mike walked in and they said, how do you get this sound and that sound? I'm not particularly enamored with how I got any sound. I'm just trying to record everything that they play and then figure out how I'm going to put it back together again if it isn't right the first time. And they never questioned. I know the first one or two times we worked, they say, is that enough bass, or are you sure? And I say, yeah, that's about right for the room, because they were working in a foreign room and strange musicians, strange everything to them. And they took me at my word the first few times we met. And I know I said, hey, you know, like, we could make it sound bigger if they sang that part again and backed up and I overdubbed a series of voices. And they looked and they said, you can do that? You know, and here we go. Look out, world. Here we come.
You can dance every dance with the guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. Say the last dance for me.
The Drifters, engineered by Tom Dowd and produced by Lieber and Stoller. Tom Dowd, by this time, was an integral part of Atlantic Records, working often on several sessions a day, generally with black artists and musicians, and recording styles of music that were still being frowned upon by the music establishment. Nevertheless, it suited him well.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I found it sterile and boring working with some of the other people that I had to work with. And I won't go on to say some of the other records I made, but they were boring. They were actually boring. I mean, I could look up and in the middle of a number, in the back of the string section, there'd be two chaps playing gin rummy while they were tacit for 20 bars or something like that. And the music is there, and here's somebody singing some magnificent song, blah, 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 and the group is going, blah, and then the conductor waves his wand, and they all pick up their strings, and they play their little four bars, and then they pass the cards out to each other. And it's boring, and that's about the amount of energy that went into the records.
There can have been nothing boring about recording live at Harlem's famed Apollo, where the audience, when suitably moved, became as much a part of the performance as those on stage. Atlantic's atmospheric album was recorded there in November 1963.
It was called Saturday Night Live at the Apollo, and we recorded three consecutive nights. Not three consecutive nights, three consecutive days. Because the Apollo Theater used to start, I think, at 11 in the morning. And there were like three shows a day or four shows a day. And then Saturday night was five shows. It was the old vaudeville stage tradition. One of the matinees, a young man named Cassius Clay came bounding out of the audience and accosted the MC. I can't recall who the MC was, but he was a man who used to talk in rhymes, and he'd say, "All right, all you people out there, I'm no square, da 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 da," and he used to come on with this kind of thing, introducing an act and so forth, and all of a sudden, this young man came bounding out of the audience up on stage. He says, "And I'm Cassius Clay, and I'm put on this earth to blah blah blah," and he went into, and we never released it. And that's something we couldn't use because Cassius Clay then was on the contract to Columbia Records. But it sits in our vault. The Ahmed and Jerry don't. They know I talked about it. They never heard it. But it sits there. But that was a great album. It was a lot of fun.
Baby, baby, baby. Darling, won't you stand by me?
From Saturday Night at the Apollo, the great Benny King. Tom Dowd was to record other live albums during his career, all aimed at capturing the spirit of live performance above all else. Outside the independents, pop music in the United States was beginning to look pretty pallid by 1963, a situation that can have done nothing but help the famed British invasion. Spearheaded by the Beatles, the invasion totally submerged many major American artists such as Bobby Darin. It should by rights have been something that disappointed Tom Dowd.
I was encouraged. The fact that all of a sudden, here was this whole new media of presentation, this whole new media of playing. I mean, it got us off of our lethargy, really. It got us out of doing the same old thing. It woke us up. And there was style and there was creative contribution in all of it. There was good taste in all of it, which was the most important thing because we were getting mamby-pamby. We were really tasteless for a while.
The overwhelming tide of British acts, while abhorring what had happened to white American pop and rock, gave nothing but support to black R&B. And the mid-60s saw a flowering of black acts, many of the best on Atlantic, and that included Wilson Pickett.
Jerry Wechsler was the first one to hear a record on Wilson and fell in love with the nature of the man singing. He said, "We've got to get that artist." We had another male artist at the same time, Solomon Burke. And Wilson was as coarse of voice as Solomon was sweet of voice, and that's why we thought we should have another male artist, because one is so syrupy sweet and we needed the other one, the belter, the hard singer, the growler, and in the tradition of an old blues singer like Winoni Harris or those kind of shouters. That was the idea. After about 3 years of recording Wilson in New York, Jerry took him down south and recorded with him once in Muscle Shoals, and he did that all by himself. That's when he came up with Funky Broadway and a couple of those sides. And then he was using the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, and I had two rhythm sections in Memphis that I was using. I had the Stax rhythm section that was the Sam and Dave Otis Redding Booker T group, and then I had another rhythm section that I found in Memphis that I was using. And Jerry said one day, "Why don't we try the other rhythm section just to change and see what happens?" And that's when we started using the American rhythm section, and that's when either Arif and I or Jerry and I would go down to Memphis and record with these other chaps. And then more and more I was producing records, because I was actually, they'd give me a handful of songs and Wilson would sing me some songs and I'd conjure up an arrangement in an impromptu fashion and we'd sit down and work it out. And in a week's time we'd come up with an album, all done, ready to come out. But yes, that's when I was working with Wilson. That was about 65 through 69, or maybe 67 through 70. It's in that period, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Wilson Pickett and In the Midnight Hour. Arguably the greatest of all the R&B performers of the 60s was Otis Redding. He was the most charismatic on stage, electric in the studio, and a joy to work with.
Nobody produced Otis, and yet everybody had an equal opportunity to give input, to make a contribution, to go for it, because everybody wanted everything to be right, and they all worked at it very hard. The Otis Blue album was done in a weekend, because Otis was on tour. They called me up on a Thursday and said, can you get down here on the weekend? And I said, sure. And they said, get down here tomorrow. And I took like a 5 o'clock flight out of New York on a Thursday night. And I was in Memphis like at 7:30 that night. And they were running down three or four songs already. And Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, we went in the studio. And by about 1 o'clock, we had four or five songs done. And later that afternoon, we started running down two or three more, how to do them, get the key right. Then I was just as much into it, saying, I don't like that introduction. It's too long. Let's get him singing faster. And they say, oh, okay, fine. And, you know, and then here we go. And then by Sunday afternoon, about 2 o'clock, the album was done. I was back on the plane and up in New York Monday with an album.
In addition to My Girl, the Otis Blue album contained Respect, I've Been Loving You Too Long, and Reading Salute to Sam Cooke's Shake. Even without the other seven tracks, it was an outstanding weekend's work. By this time, around 1965-66, some of the young white American bands, following the British example, were getting wholeheartedly involved in black R&B. It was a turning point, and an important one for Tom Dowd, too.
The major breakthrough where there was no dispute about who made the record was the Rascals. Good Lovin' and that whole thing. There are about four or five Rascal albums in a row. Rascals were appearing at a club in Long Island called The Barge. And everybody was raving about this little quartet down there, just terrorizing everybody. Their manager, who was Sid Bernstein, was anxious to get them signed, but he was going to go for the best deal. And Ahmed and Jerry hung out with them and got an in to them and must have put some weight on it by saying, well, you know, these are our friends and they like you and we like you and this big happy family kind of thing. And a week later they asked me to go down and look at them and consider whether I could record them there or not. And I went down and I said, no, I can't record them there. The place is impossible. We're never going to come out with a product. And they said, well, you've got to go down there and get the best out of them you can, because they swear that they have to be recorded live because the audience feeds them and they feed the audience and it's essential and so forth. And so I went down and I spent it might have been a Labor Day weekend or something like that with them. And we recorded two or three days, and then we came back up into the city and we listened to it. And I said to them then, I said, now, we don't, you know, if you want, you shouldn't even do this song. It doesn't belong in the album. This one we can record better in the studio and so forth. And I worked on them and I talked to them and they said, all right, let's try it. And the first two or three days in the studio, we did like Mustang Sally and Good Loving and I don't know, one or two other songs. And we mixed them down rough and compared them to the live tape that they were so disappointed in, and at the same time saying that's where the energy is. All of a sudden they said, hey, let's make the whole album that way, and boom, that was it. You know, from here on in, I was doing the Rascals.
One, two, three.
The first record came out in a plain jacket, and it was a single, and it was a hit. The second record, they wanted their pictures on it, and multicolor, and so forth, and so on. And when the second record came out, all of a sudden, we had very, very stiff resistance in one or two territories in the United States. Because when everybody heard the first record, everybody thought they were black. And when they saw the cover on the second record, they didn't like them anymore. Very strange.
Not the least of Dowd's problems with the Rascals was working with a band that was new to a recording studio.
The problem exists more today than ever before because the nature of the equipment that the aspiring artist has to work with at home affords them such latitude that they work at home hours and hours, months and months, and develop sounds and things that they walk around listening to as if it is their image of what their final product should sound like. And now when you get them in the studio and you start recording them, you can't afford them the comfort that they want because you can't do what they want that these toys that they've been employing have done for them, and you have this terrible communication problem, or you have to figure out how can we get it to sound like that and still make it sound better and give them the feeling that it's what they want or what they should have. It's a problem.
After the Rascals came another white band, this time British, and with a style that Dowd was not totally familiar with. The band comprised Eric Clapton, Jack Bruce, and Ginger Baker.
The first Cream album was a three-day album. They were on the end of a visitor's visa, and they had to leave the country. And Ahmed called me up one day in the studio and said, "We have to record this group tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday. They're arriving late this afternoon. It's an English group." And I said, "Fine." He said, "They have to be on a plane, I don't know, Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. Their visa expires or something like that." And all of a sudden, these tons of equipment start walking in the studio, and I'm trying to think how big this group is, you know? And it was Cream. It was Eric and Jack and Ginger. They had just been on tour, and it was decided to record them before they left for their second album, which was Disraeli Gears. And they walked in the studio, and we started on a Friday morning, and I got them into the limousines about 5 o'clock on Sunday. The album was done. It was the first contact I had had with any kind of group of that nature at all. I was just absolutely carried away with their musicianship and their precision. They were incredible. I never saw anything like that in my life, and powerful. It was just frightening. It was just frightening.
Felix Pappalardi is credited as producer of that album, Disraeli Gears, and here Dowd explains why.
Felix was hot in the New York area for being into that kind of music and being an advocate. So Ahmed ran Felix in to, like, if there was any hole, if there was any communication problem, if there was any taste consideration that I wouldn't be sensitive to, Felix would be in on it. And so Felix got to be friends with Jack and was in all the sessions. He played on some of the things, etc. But Felix was there primarily to transcend into Atlantic somebody who knew what was going on with this stuff, because none of us knew it. Ahmed knew it, but we were not exposed to it in person. But it was never a problem with me, because we were friends instantly. Never had a problem. As a fact.
More live albums were to come, and one in particular, whilst not of the highest technical quality, captured a memorable British performance of a Stax Volt review.
The first night in Finsbury Park was the first recording, and we were using three-track equipment. I managed to get my hands on the equipment that morning. We ran it into the theater, and we set it up that afternoon. There was a rehearsal. We checked it out. And then I recorded in the wings that whole performance that day. Now, that was like a Monday or a Tuesday before Easter. Wednesday we flew to Paris. Thursday we did a concert in Paris. And there I was using Barclay equipment, which was four-track. And Friday morning, Good Friday morning, I flew back to London with the Parisian tapes under my arm. The other tapes were already in the Polydor offices in Stafford Court, and they had a small studio there so that I could go up there and mix the album down, because they wanted an album out in Europe while the tour was on. And they had the brilliant idea that they wanted an album out in the English market and they wanted an album out in the French market. So Good Friday and Saturday and Sunday and Easter Monday, which I never knew existed before in life, I spent mixing down and editing the Finsbury Park version of the album for the English-speaking release and the French version, both on that weekend, and mastered them on Tuesday and went home Wednesday. And those were the two versions of that album that came out. But it's all so
Tom Dowd was elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 10 years after his death. He passed away from emphysema in October of 2002 in Florida, and he was still working as an engineer and record producer. Others that haven't been mentioned in this, he also helped produce
and engineer Leonard Skinner, Black Oak, Arkansas, Rod Stewart. The list is endless, absolutely endless. Tom Dow was 77 when he passed away in Florida in the year 2002. All right, coming up following the news at the top of the hour, you'll, again, Susanna is on maternity leave. So the Manhattan Project, which Tom Dow...